Good morning and welcome to the chat on Newsday Amarillo and News Channel 10-2. I'm David Lovejoy.
Good morning, I'm Megan Collier.
And I'm Chuckalicious, Chuck Williams.
And right now, we are joined by Allie, Michael, and Eleanor Bartoli. Their new book, Collective Anti-Racism for White People, addresses a subject that I deal with every day and I think about every day. There's anything in your life cannot get better by silence. If you and your partner are having a rough time, not talking to each other is not going to help it. If you're right. Unhealthy and you're sick, not telling your doctor is not going to help you get better. But when it comes to racism, sometimes we don't want to have that uncomfortable conversation. These two ladies join us today to talk about this issue. Welcome to the chat.
Thank you so much.
Nice to be here.
There's just so much to unpack in this topic. So I want to just talk, let's dive into the book specifically. So what distinguishes this book from other sort of anti-racism books out there?
We're really trying to pick up where other anti-racism books leave off. We feel like we have a lot of books out there that let you know what the problem is, but it's not always clear what the path forward is. And so we're trying to support people to think both about actions they can take, specifically about talking to other white people. Often we don't realize as white people, my work is really to talk to other white people, to support other white people, to have the skills, the resilience, the muscle to be able to stay in this conversation about racism, which, as Mr. David was saying, is hard. It's hard, and I need support in it. And so we want to help people find the way, the path forward, and then to do the internal work. When we come up against our own selves and our bodies say, no, don't say that word. Don't get in that conversation. You're going to make a mistake. You're going to embarrass yourself. And then our bodies actually stop us. We go into fight, flight, freeze mode. And Eleonora gives us all of these amazing strategies for dealing with the anxiety that comes with race conversations.
You know, to me, it seems this, to me, it has to be one of the most difficult conversations going down in the world. It's some places it's considered rude to talk about race. What do you say to that?
Well, I grew up in a place where it was rude to talk about race. I mean, that was what I was trained when in my family and my community. It's like, it's the racists who talk about race. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I thought for a long time that that was just kind of my community norm. But what I'm learning is that that was true all over the country in the 80s. And that wasn't an accident, partly because there was a national effort to really smear some of the Black nationalist campaigns that were underway at that time. And so when we, you know, right now we have another giant campaign saying we can't talk about race. Critical race theory is bad. We shouldn't be talking about it in schools. And we're trying to say, no, we are so easy to manipulate when we're told that we can't have this conversation. This is the one conversation we as Americans need to have that we're not having. And, it's a life-giving conversation. It doesn't need to be so painful. This is a love movement. We can do this, but we're going to need each other, and white people can support one another. And we suggest white people support each other, not because we think white people need to be coddled, but because it's strategic. Mm. If this is a hard conversation to have, then I'm going to need some support. And I can't ask people of color and Native people to give me that support. They're trying to survive in a racist system.
But other white people can do that. Right? Like, they've been doing the work for so long. Now it's our turn to sort of take the baton and let's also do the work, right? In concert with one another.
Absolutely.
Ladies, do you feel like sometimes people have weaponized the word racism? I hear people say, you're racist. Now, we're all born with prejudice. We all are. We all prejudice against up. I don't like mustard. I hate people who eat mustard. Not a big fan of mustard. When you act on that hate of mustard, then you're being a bigot. And it's a system that's racism, not a person. A system is racist. And so we hear it, and it's a death knell. If somebody puts that tag on somebody, they're a racist, then it's up to them to prove differently. And is that sometimes an unfair way to handle the issues of race in our country?
Absolutely. And it's also a way to keep making it an individual problem, just as you said. So trauma-informed anti-racism, as we like to call it, is flipping the question of what's wrong with you, what's wrong with you. And we ask the question of ourselves as white people, why do I always get stuck? What's wrong with me? Why can't I do the right thing? Why don't I know more? But the trauma-informed lens flips the question and says, what happened to you? What happened to you? What happened to many of us, most of us white people in this country, that we were socialized into a frame that has made us have such predictable behaviors and such predictable reactions. And so the moment we ask what happened to us, we switch the lens from the individual problem to a systemic problem. And when it's a systemic problem, it doesn't mean that we have nothing to do with it, but all of a sudden, what we need to deconstruct and how do we need to create a new relationship to becomes much more apparent. And it's beautiful what she said. You know, the worst thing that you can make me feel as a white person interested in anti-racism is that I'm racist. And that's a beautiful concept in psychology, Michael Steele, that talks is called stereotype threat. So if you ignite my stereotype threat, just my fear of fitting the stereotype of the racist, then all I'm going to do is try to prove myself non-racist, as if that existed. As Ibram Kendi says, you can be racist or anti-racist. The wrong racist doesn't exist. And so all of a sudden, rather than walking this path and putting all my energy in walking this path, I'm putting all my energy in trying to prove myself not something. So the book we describe tools and concepts that help you redirect your energy where it belongs, on the path and towards the system, not towards individuals.
Can you talk a little bit more about what psychology has to do with anti-racism?
So we often say that we live in a racist system, but the racist system lives within us. And since it lives within us, it has co-opted our sense of safety and our sense of ease and okayness in the world. And so even entering our conversation about race compromises our sense of belonging and our sense of being a good person. So I wake up, I want to be, I work really hard, I want to love my neighbors, and I try to do all the right things, and then I'm told that I'm not, I haven't done that. Well, that's hard to hear. We call that a moral injury. We have violated our own norms. And I'm thinking, but my intentions were so good, but I was trying to say the right thing. And so we have to understand that our psychology blocks us from really engaging in the conversation in a productive way. And we stumble upon our own feeling bad about ourselves, and we lose track of what we actually have to do to move the conversation forward, which is actually what we want to do.
Right.
Well, you know, you made mention of this being systemic, but isn't changing the idea actually about changing the system itself?
Yes, absolutely. And we want to emphasize that the system is made up of individuals. And right. So if enough individuals can shift their thinking about the system and work to undermine the aspects of the system that maintain the racial caste system, the system can't stand. But that's the thing. We need millions. We need hundreds of millions of white people to engage this anti-racist pathway for eight generations. That's from Resmaa Menakem, eight generations. And so what that means is that it's not enough for me to have some anti-racist ideas, or for me to call out the racist next to me and say, like, oh, you said something racist, so I'm going to attack you because I'm anti-racist. Anti-racist doesn't mean I'm anti you. It means I'm anti the system. And so I'm going to reach out to you in a way that calls you in, that asks you to think about what you said, but also that supports you to take your next step on the journey, so that you don't suddenly have all this anxiety. I don't want to have anything to do with anti-racism, but rather says, come join us. This is a love movement, and we're going to shift our society. We don't have to keep living like this. This racial caste system that's existed for 500 years, we can shift this, but it's going to take every single one of us doing what we can, where we can, with who we are.
Real quickly, I'd like to jump into some of the myths and realities. And I know one that I hear quite frequently, and for the longest time, it would make me scratch my head when somebody says, I don't see color. That's just not true.
Right.
You can't live. Like, that's just not, that's just a concept that just, it doesn't happen that way.
I think so many white people were socialized to believe that's the right answer. If I want to be a good person, if I want to raise good children or good white children, which my parents never would have said the word white at that time, but really, if I want to raise good white children, I need to teach them not to see race and to be colorblind. I think it comes from a desire for race not to matter. Mm. And what we have to get past is that race does matter. We live in a society that's profoundly shaped by racism, that's not going to change by ignoring it. We can't just suddenly say like, oh, you know, let's just like move forward with the status quo because everything looks okay to me. We have to be able to, we can't do anything about racism unless we talk about it. And so that's going to require color consciousness, or being what Melody Hobson calls color brave rather than color.
Oh, okay. Funny you should mention that. It takes courage to do that. How do you necessarily train for courage?
Beautiful. And that's where I think psychology has some of the most to offer. So we have a lot of tools that, in fact, are directed to soothe anxiety and train for courage. So we think, well, just as long as you learn the right concept, you should be able to do this. And in fact, it's not true once we talked about the fact that anxiety steps in and blocks us. And also questioning white supremacy is scary. Our safety is tied to it, directly and proportionally tied to it. So the more you disrupt the system, the more you're going to get some kind of backlash. And it could be minor in terms of sort of people don't like you and they start rolling your eyes as they did to me when you enter a faculty meeting, or they start sending you hate mail and threatening your family. And so, you know, it's a continuum and not everything happens to everybody at the same time, but the change means change and the system doesn't want to be changed. So you actually have to train for courage so that your system and your physiology don't stop you when you're about to try to operationalize your knowledge and your intentions. And there's lots of techniques to do that, one of which is exposure, and there are some rehearsal kinds of scenarios, and Ali and I did a ton in our groups together when we train early on, and so the book is full of tools and techniques to actually train for courage and be able to walk the path as you mean to.
I think training for courage is such a profound way to say that.
Right.
I mean, I think that's so wonderful, and we can take that into so many spaces in our daily lives. But in particular, you know, practicing anti-racism is literally a practice. It's something that you get better at the more you do. So take us through some of those ideas, you know, on how to incorporate this daily into your life.
So some things become lifestyles. So you vote and you expand your social circle, et cetera, et cetera. And then people think, oh, but to do anti-racist work, I really should be becoming a lawyer. I should be doing policy work. I should be a community organizer. Now, I'm really poor as a community organizer. I'm a good educator. And so what we don't understand always, that racism lives everywhere, in academic programs, in grocery stores, in classrooms, in accounting rooms,
hospitals,
boards, etc. So anything that is your thing, anything that is your sphere of influence can benefit from your work. And so the first thing is to really assess, okay, what am I good at? Where am my sphere of influence? What do I have a talent for? And then just use your talent exactly what you have, speaking, writing, cooking, training, advocating, anything that actually is for in the service of anti-racism. As Ali said, it will take millions of people everywhere. So everybody has something to offer, exactly who they are, exactly where they are.
That's it. Well, their new book hit stands today. Our Problem, Our Path, Collective Anti-Racism for White People, grounded in an understanding of anti-racism as a daily lifelong practice. Doctors, thank you so much for your time. We're going
to
have you back on because we've got some more things to explore and look at, if you don't mind.
I would love that. Wonderful. You guys are awesome.
Listening group. Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you.
We appreciate your time and good luck with the book. And I'll give you a call this evening and we'll set up something because I think we don't get better unless we talk about it.
I would love to have that conversation with you. This is,
what a pleasure.
Thanks so much.
Anytime, thank you. Doctors.